Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
First of all, I think Rudy McRomney wouldn't make a bad ticket. I kind of like the order, John. But, you know.
Rudy Giuliani from last night's Republican presidential hopefuls debate. Did you see it on Fox News Channel? Definitely the best run of the three debates, in my opinion. Much better organized than the Chris Matthews scattershot affair. Good follow-ups by Chris Wallace, Wendell Goler, and Britt Hume, and they allowed for some interaction between the candidates, which the Brian Williams one with the Democrats for some reason strictly prohibited. Here's an example of that. It begins with Mitt Romney criticizing John McCain on his conservative credentials and McCain's response.
My fear is that McCain-Kennedy would do to immigration what McCain-Feingold has done to campaign finance and money in politics, and that's bad.
Senator McCain, you want to respond to that for 30 seconds?
Well, I've kept a consistent position on campaign finance reform. Is there anyone who believes there's not enough money washing around money in politics, which has corrupted our own party? I have kept a consistent position on right to life, and I haven't changed my position on even numbered years or have changed because of the different offices that I may be running for.
So a lot more excerpts to come from last night's debate, including Rudy Giuliani and Congressman Ron Paul, with quite a candid exchange on the causes of 9/11. And we will talk about it all now with Republican pollster Michael Maslansky. He is Frank Luntz's partner in Luntz Maslansky Strategic Research, a communications and polling firm, and Newsweek columnist Eleanor Clift, maybe better known as the longtime liberal seat holder on the McLaughlin Group. So welcome both of you to WNYC today. Good morning.
Good morning.
There was that key exchange that we just played last night, and I think it was a key exchange in the debate between Romney and McCain. Michael, you want to break down why they did what they did?
Well, I think certainly McCain's response, at a minimum, was trying to reinforce this flip-flop message about Romney. I think the thing that he missed, or the opportunity that he missed, is that he's assuming a much higher level of political literacy on the part of most of the viewing public than I think that they actually have. So not naming names, even though everyone in the know may have known who he was talking about, is actually a missed opportunity.
What are you talking about specifically?
Well, he didn't directly push it back to Romney and say, unlike the person who made this comment, unlike Governor Romney.
Oh, I see.
So we all know what he's talking about, but much of the viewing public doesn't yet fully appreciate the fact that Romney's being hit for this flip-flop.
Right. When he said, I haven't changed my position on even numbered years or changed because of different offices that I may be running for, that was a direct slap at Romney, but you think it went over the heads of a lot of the viewers.
I do.
All right. Eleanor Clift, do you want to talk about that exchange?
Well, I thought that Senator McCain aimed it quite nicely at Mitt Romney, but the point is well taken that unless you're an insider, you didn't catch it. But I doubt the audience was that wide for this. This was not must-watch television. And I suspect people who watch Fox are well aware of Mitt Romney's history of flip-flopping. So I think given the audience for this debate, it probably did hit home.
And I noticed that there was a text poll at the end that Fox News Channel was doing. Of course, there was also a text poll on regular Fox television at the end of American Idol, in which probably 30 million people voted. I wonder how many voted in the text poll on Fox News Channel after the debate. But on the substance of that exchange, Michael, those were basically political shots in both directions, either on being too liberal, saying McCain-Kennedy immigration would do to immigration, what what McCain-Feingold did to campaign finance, versus being a flip-flopper. I'd love to see a longer substantive debate on the two of them on the underlying issues there, McCain-Feingold and McCain-Kennedy immigration. How central do you think these issues are now to the fate of either candidate?
Well, first, I think that it's really difficult in the debate format as it was set up and with 10 candidates up there for anybody to get substantive on anything. And I think that's one of the reasons why this debate has a tough time moving the ball forward in terms of of who's doing well and who's doing poorly. You know, I think John McCain's conservative credentials are certainly going to be an important part of the debate for the nomination, and I really do believe that Romney's reputation for flip flopping could be his downfall. I mean, I'm not sure in a post Kerry world how you overcome that reputation.
One of the main themes last night seemed to be competing with each other to show off how conservative they were, while defending, when necessary, some of their more liberal positions if they couldn't credibly walk away from them without being called a flip-flopper. And how conservative were they? Well, here's a sampling of some of the candidates displaying their conservative bona fides last night. On how much federal spending to cut, Congressman Tom Tancredo goes almost all the way.
I'd start with the departments, Department of Education, Department of Energy, Department of Homeland Security. We've started with the Republicans put in the Department of Homeland Security. It's a monstrous type of bureaucracy.
You would eliminate the Department of Homeland Security in the midst of a war, sir?
Well, I think we should not go to more bureaucracy. It didn't work.
All right. And how conservative were they also on how much spending to cut? Now let's see. That was Congressman Ron Paul, wasn't it? Talking about cutting the Department of Homeland Security.
I think that was Tancredo.
Oh, that was Tancredo. Okay, Tancredo saying, forgive me, my confusion. Saying only defense is the job of the government. How conservative were they? Also on how much spending to cut, Congressman Ron Paul.
Well, there are a million programs that we operate and that we pay for with the federal government that are far beyond the bounds of the Constitution. Follow the Constitution, and you'll know what's necessary, and that's the defense of the country. That's it for the federal government.
All right. How conservative were they on abortion? Here's how far Senator Sam Brownback goes when asked a hypothetical about a woman who feels abortion is not morally wrong, a woman who was raped.
And it's a terrible situation where there's a rape that's involved or incest. But it nonetheless remains that this is a child that we're talking about doing this to, of ending the life of this child. Will that make the woman in a better situation if that's what takes place? And I don't think so, and I think we can explain it when we look at it for what it is, a beautiful child of a loving God.
And how conservative were they? Here is Congressman Duncan Hunter's response when given a ticking nuclear time bomb terrorism scenario. Would he torture suspects who are in custody and might have information that could prevent the attack?
This would take a one-minute conversation with the Secretary of Defense. I would call him up or call him in. I would say to SecDef, in terms of getting information that would save American lives, even if it involves very high-pressure techniques, one sentence. Get the information, have it back within an hour, and let's act on it. Let's execute with special operations or whoever else is necessary, and I will take full responsibility. Get the information.
I'm going to come to the others in a moment, but I want to circle back to you, Senator McCain. You've heard reference here from me and others of what the administration calls the enhanced interrogation techniques. Mm-hmm. I may have misunderstood you, but it sounded to me as if you regard those techniques or from what you know about them as torture, do you?
Yes, and the interesting thing about that aspect is that during the debate when we did the Detainee Treatment Act, there was a sharp division between those who had served in the military and those who hadn't. Virtually every senior officer, retired or active duty, starting with Colin Powell, General Vesey, and everyone else, agreed with my position that we should not torture people.
So a sampling of the candidates last night establishing their conservative credentials, plus some more John McCain at the end there, being his individual self. Back to our guests, Republican pollster Michael Maslansky and Newsweek columnist Eleanor Clift. And Eleanor, I guess this is the nature of the primary process?
Well, yeah, but most of the sound bites you just played are from the marginal candidates, who I feel with great confidence that Ron Paul and Duncan Hunter and Congressman Tancredo are not going to be the next president or even the nominee. I think the key candidates, Governor Romney, Senator McCain, Mayor Giuliani, were more tempered. And they were vying with each other as to who was the most acceptable conservative. And I thought Governor Romney managed to say McCain Kennedy, I think, three times in the space of a minute. And that's the kind of thing that really unsettles conservatives, is McCain's reaching out to, you know, a liberal like Ted Kennedy.
Michael, want to talk about that dynamic?
Well, you know, I think that there is an interesting dynamic happening. I totally agree with Eleanor that it's the marginal candidates fighting for the mantle of conservatism, while the three main candidates are somewhere closer to the middle. I think Rudy is setting up a nice dynamic and really trying to move the primary debate right to the general election debate, in the way that he responded or didn't respond to the initial abortion question by quoting Hillary Clinton and the threat that she raises. I think that McCain did a fairly good job of sounding principled and bipartisan, even though I agree that, you know, putting his name next to Kennedy doesn't do him any good in a conservative audience.
And we'll hear a lot more Rudy Giuliani coming up. But I want to play one more clip of Duncan Hunter and ask about him as an interesting second-tier so-called candidate. And here he's not talking so much about his conservatism, but rather about his credentials.
One of us is going to be a commander-in-chief in a few months with a tough military operation and situation to deal with. I've been the chairman of the Armed Services Committee for the last 4 years. I served in uniform in Vietnam. Didn't do anything special, but I served. My son has done two tours in Iraq. I can look at the American people and say, we are in this together. And I think the other guys ought to lay out their credentials to be commander-in-chief.
You know, Michael, it's kind of amazing to me that Duncan Hunter isn't considered more of a first-tier player, or that his name wasn't better known around the country before the race began. He was, as he said, chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee for the last 4 years when Republicans had control. Now, of course, the chair is a Democrat. He's got the Vietnam background. He's one of the very few members of Congress having a child, serving in Iraq. He's done all this stuff. He spearheaded the fence to the degree that it's been built in the San Diego area where he's from along the Mexican border. That's such a big issue. Why isn't Duncan Hunter better known and more highly considered politically?
Well, I think, first of all, his best answer of the night, I think, was about the fence and what he did there in San Diego. I think that he's a House member, and in a campaign where you've got three very marquee names with a lot of money, it's very difficult to break through. And I'm not sure that while he's got some good policy credentials on national security and even homeland security, they are they're not the kind of positions, and he's not the kind of personality that has had any ability to break through. And I don't think that he really did that in this debate either.
Eleanor, he reminds me a little bit, and I don't want to take this comparison too far, but of Bill Richardson on the Democratic side, who also has all these foreign policy credentials in addition, in his case, to being the governor of a state, but he's considered second tier and, you know, not that well known except to political junkies like us.
Well, I think Duncan Hunter's first problem is he's coming from the House. Has anybody ever gone directly from the House to the presidency? I can't think of one, if that's the case. And plenty of governors, the last four of our last five presidents have been former governors. So I would put Richardson, you know, above Hunter.
Why is that?
Even in terms of national recognition. I also doubt that Congressman Hunter has much of a brief when it comes to domestic issues. So, I mean, it does not surprise me that he's in the second or third tier, and I doubt that he's going to get out of that. Now, he's probably running to be Secretary of Defense in a Republican administration if it happens. There are lots of reasons to run short of thinking that you can actually win.
Mm-hmm. All right, coming up, we will focus on how the local guy did. We'll play three or four clips of Rudy Giuliani from last night's debate on different issues, including his interruption of Congressman Ron Paul on the issue of what caused 9/11. It was an unusually candid exchange around the fundamental question of why do they hate us. So we'll continue. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay tuned. WNYC, as we continue to listen to excerpts from last night's Republican presidential debate on the Fox News Channel with Republican pollster Michael Maslansky. He's Frank Luntz's partner in Luntz Maslansky Strategic Research. And Eleanor Cliff, contributing editor to Newsweek magazine, who you know better perhaps as the longtime liberal seat on the McLaughlin Group. And I want to go right to this exchange between Giuliani and Ron Paul. It does start with Congressman Ron Paul, who, if you don't know him, is a Republican from Texas. He's in the House. He was the Libertarian Party candidate for president in 1988. And he goes after not just the war in Iraq, which he very much opposes, but he's asked here about the causes of 9/11. And listen to what he says underlies why we were attacked on 9/11. And then listen to how Giuliani jumps in.
Have you ever read about the reasons they attacked us? They attack us because we've been over there. We've been bombing Iraq for 10 years. We've been in the Middle East. I think Reagan was right. We don't understand the irrationality of Middle Eastern politics. So right now we're building an embassy in Iraq that's bigger than the Vatican. We're building 14 permanent bases. What would we say here if China was doing this in our country or in the Gulf of Mexico? We would be objecting. We need to look at what we do from the perspective of what would happen if somebody else did it to us.
Are you suggesting we invited the 9/11 attack, sir?
I'm suggesting that we listen to the people who attacked us and the reason they did it. And they are delighted that we're over there because Osama bin Laden has said, I am glad you're over on our sand because we can target you so much easier. They have already now, since that time, have killed 3,400 of our men, and I don't think it was necessary.
Wendell, may I make a comment on that? That's really an extraordinary statement. It's an extraordinary statement as someone who lived through the attack of September 11, that we invited the attack because we were attacking Iraq. I don't think I've ever heard that before, and I've heard some pretty absurd explanations for September 11. I would ask the congressman to withdraw that comment and tell us that he didn't really mean that.
Congressman?
I believe very sincerely that the CIA is correct when they teach and talk about blowback. When we went into Iran in 1953 and installed the Shah, yes, there was blowback. The reaction to that was the taking of our hostages, and that persists. And if we ignore that, we ignore that at our own risk, that if we think that we can do what we want around the world and not incite hatred, then we have a problem. They don't come here to attack us because we're rich and we're free. They come and they attack us because we're over there. I mean, what would we think if we were if other foreign countries were doing that to us?
Can I have 30 seconds, please?
No, wait a second.
They all want 30 seconds of time. That would be 5 minutes since there are 10 of them. A central 2 minutes and 30 seconds from the debate last night. And let's get reaction from our guests, Michael Maslansky, Republican pollster, and Newsweek columnist Eleanor Clift. Eleanor, obviously Congressman Ron Paul isn't going to get the Republican nomination for president. Maybe after that he'll get the Democratic nomination.
Right. I mean, he really served it up for Mayor Giuliani. 75% of Republican primary voters support the president and the war. And this is Giuliani's trump card, and he hopes that his image of leadership and strength going back to 9/11 will trump the voters' concern about his more liberal social policies. And when you narrow down the soundbite, and you played much more than other media outlets, when you narrow it down, it really does make Ron Paul look foolish. But he is stating an argument that is very real, and that is that our policies in the Middle East have created the conditions that led to 9/11. But you can't say that in a short soundbite and sound reasonable. And so I think that Ron Paul was definitely the loser in this exchange.
Eleanor, how much do you think that the leading Democratic candidates, let's say Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, John Edwards, maybe Bill Richardson, would accept that statement, that they don't come here to attack us because we're rich and we're free, they come and attack us because we're over there? How controversial would that be on the Democratic side?
I think they would accept the substance of that, but they would have to find a different way of saying it, because that's like Harry Reid saying we've lost in Iraq. We may have lost militarily, but you cannot say it that way. It just goes at America's image of itself. And it's a sure loser politically.
Because, Michael, it's such a central issue as to how we go forward in the world to fight terrorism. If we assume that they're just fighting us because they're religious radicals and they want to set up a caliphate in Maryland, or if we think that it has something to do on some level with U.S. foreign policy as the only superpower, but it's almost a taboo issue.
Well, I think you said, going forward, if people are going to tackle this issue and they're going to talk about this idea, it's got to be in a prospective way. It can't be looking back. It can't be in any way a debate about why we were attacked on 9/11. It can be part of the discussion about what we need to do going forward, but I think any time you try and take this issue and look backward, you're going to get in trouble. I don't think that there's any way to communicate effectively about it.
Now, as far as Giuliani is concerned, was he just salivating, waiting for an opportunity like this to kind of change the topic with respect to himself from abortion to terrorism?
Well, I think certainly this is why people love Rudy, is that kind of emotion and the kind of articulateness around an emotional topic, and that's his sweet spot. I mean, I think Eleanor's right that Congressman Paul couldn't have set it up better for Rudy if he wanted to. And yes, I'm sure Rudy was looking for an opportunity to change the discussion, and that was the big punch that was thrown all night. I mean, that was, to me, the line that made the debate.
Did you want to say something about that?
No, I was just agreeing.
Yeah. Well, I want to play a few more clips of Rudy Giuliani. We're going to focus for our last few minutes here on how the mayor of New York, the former mayor of New York, did, since we're a New York City radio station. And I want to go back to the abortion question now. This clip begins with a question from one of the questioners, Fox News White House correspondent Wendell Goler.
Mayor Giuliani, I think you expect your stance on a woman's right to choose to attract a lot of attention in this setting, sir. You have said that you personally hate abortion, but support a woman's right to choose. Governor Huckabee says that's like saying, I hate slavery, but people can go ahead and practice it. Tell me why he's wrong.
Well, there's no circumstances under which I could possibly imagine anyone choosing slavery or supporting slavery. There are people, millions and millions of Americans, who are of good conscience as we are, who make a different choice about abortion. And I think in a country where you want to keep government out of people's lives, or government out of people's lives from the point of view of coercion, you have to respect that.
All right. So, you know, before we get into this, I just want to say one more thing about that exchange between Giuliani and Ron Paul. I don't know how late either of you stayed up watching Fox News Channel last night, but I turned it off at about 11:15, so 45 minutes after the debate ended, and they were having this text poll. So you know as a pollster, Michael, that it's not a scientific poll, but these are people who watch the debate who feel strongly about one thing or another, and they wanted to know who people thought won the debate. And at least as of 11:15 last night, Ron Paul was leading with 30%, and out of 10 candidates, 30% is an overwhelmingly large number of the votes to get. Second was Romney at 27%, and then Giuliani at 15%, and everybody else was way down. I don't know how it finally turned out, but did you see any of that? And as a pollster, what do you make of it?
Well, I did see some of it. It's tough to judge when you have no idea how many people actually voted and where they were coming from. I mean, you don't have to be a Republican primary voter to vote in the text poll. Now, you were more likely to be a Republican primary voter if you're watching Fox News, but it's really tough to make a judgment on that. I think, you know, to Ron Paul's credit, he made a case for himself. He was very clear. He was very differentiated in his positions. I don't think many Republican primary voters are going to agree with him, but I thought that he actually did a good job of making himself stand out as a different choice.
Eleanor, anything on what those numbers might mean across party lines or whatever?
Well, Ron Paul was the Libertarian candidate in 1988, and maybe every Libertarian in the country is eager to see how he's going to fare, and maybe they were the ones that voted. But look, he did say something different about Iraq and something that needed to be said, and he didn't back down. And so there's a fascination with that, as well there should be.
And my producer just gave me some numbers. He's quick with his computer, and it turns out there were 40,000 total votes. Romney wound up first with 29% of the votes. Ron Paul did come in second with 25%, and then Giuliani with 19, followed by McCain and the others. So McCain only had 5% came in fourth for McCain. So Michael, real quick, a last word on that, knowing more of those numbers?
I think it's really interesting because, if I had to rate the event, it was I thought McCain actually did a pretty good job and fought a good fight the whole way through. I thought Romney was a lot shakier than he was in the first debate and wouldn't have given him as much credit. You don't know who was voting, and so it's a little difficult to draw any conclusions from it.
Back to Giuliani on abortion, and we're going to play another clip. We heard in the one we just aired that he has kind of turned a page here, and he's not trying to play both sides of the fence and say, well, I'd appoint strict construction as judges, but that doesn't mean I'm for overturning Roe and things like that. He said forthrightly there, there is no circumstance under which I could possibly imagine anyone choosing slavery or supporting slavery. There are people, millions and millions of Americans who are as of good conscience as we are, who make different choices about abortion. So he completely rejected this comparison by Governor Huckabee that we hear a lot, that people are on different sides of the slavery issue too. Now he tries to finesse it in another answer a little bit and talk about his record in New York.
I think we can agree, all of us on this stage, that we should seek reductions in abortion. I ultimately do believe in a woman's right of choice, but I think that there are ways in which we can reduce abortions. Abortions went down 16% when I was the mayor. Adoptions went up 133% during the 8 years that I was mayor compared to the prior 8 years. So there are ways in which we can work together and achieve results that we all want.
Now, Eleanor, you're a New Yorker, if I recall correctly.
That's right.
I wonder if you can help me truth cop this. Now, he said adoptions went up 133% during the 8 years that he was mayor. As I recall, and we covered that on this show, he never talked about, please don't have an abortion, put your child up for adoption. That was not an issue in the Giuliani years. He was trying to get kids out of foster care, which is a temporary situation, and into the permanent situation of adoption. He was trying to focus on, unfit biological parents and getting the children removed from them and placed permanently in adoption. So was he twisting something there?
Well, I think he's massaging the statistics a little bit. And I must say, watching him, this is an interesting tightrope that he's walking, because if I can just put myself in as sort of a woman and independent, perhaps, he loses me when he gets too tough. Then he brings me back when he's courageous on these choice issues, especially given the company that he's keeping. So I think that he can make the case to the party that he can win in a general election, that he can expand the Republican base, that he is the big tent character, and that may well please Republicans if they're hungry enough to win. I mean, they're going to have to choose between purity and winning, and since there's no one among the front runners who are pure, why not go with the one who seems to have the most command nationally? And I think that certainly is Rudy Giuliani.
Michael Mislansky, how do you think he did with respect to the abortion question last night?
Well, I agreed with everything that Eleanor just said. I think with respect to the abortion question, I think he's still trying to hone his message, but I think the idea and what the campaign obviously recognizes is that equivocation on this issue is going to get you nowhere good. And if you go back to the 2004 election, the attribute that we found that was most important in arguably getting George Bush elected was that he said what he meant and he meant what he said. And that on abortion in particular, Rudy has to live with the fact that he is pro-choice, at least with respect to how the government deals with abortion, and he's got to make a clean statement on it. Because if he sounds like he's wishy-washy, if he sounds like he's not sure of where he stands, it's going to be held against him, and that really could be a problem.
So one more clip of Rudy Giuliani from the debate last night, and this was in the part of the debate where they were trying to out-conservative each other on their various right-wing credentials, and this is a point where he was challenged, trying to remember by who, maybe it was Governor Gilmore or somebody, saying that he had raised taxes. He was asked by one of the questioners, I think it was Chris Wallace, about how much spending had gone up while he was mayor, and said it was a lot during his 8 years. And here is part of Giuliani's response.
I lowered taxes 23 times, and I'd have to point out to you, Wendell, I did it in a place where it's real hard to do it. If you can lower spending in New York City, Washington is easier than New York City to deal with. And finally, I put controls on every one of the city agencies, which is what I would do in Washington. I do Reagan-like, across-the-board budget cuts, 5% to 20%. And there's a great opportunity that we have coming up. About 50% of the federal employees are going to retire in the next 10 years during the term of maybe one of us. And we have the opportunity of not refilling all those positions. And I would pledge not to refill 50% of them.
So we've just got about a minute left, but I'm surprised that this didn't break out as making more news. Mayor Giuliani there proposed cutting the federal workforce by a quarter over the next 10 years. That would be a huge cut. He said 50% of the federal workforce will retire in the next 10 years. Half of those people shouldn't be replaced. How dramatic a proposal, Eleanor Clift, is that? What would that do to the federal government?
Well, I would hope that he is going to create jobs elsewhere. Look, I mean, I think this is one of the clear lines between the Republicans and the Democrats. The Democrats talk about what government can do for you, and for the most part, the Republicans talk about dismantling government.
What government can you eliminate? Right, and what government does to you. Right. Yeah. Michael, anything on that? Again, I'm surprised that didn't break out as a major proposal. I guess with all these other things, these, you know, moments of high drama, the policy proposal doesn't necessarily break out. But what do you think about that?
Well, I think that what we're still missing from this entire debate is really a high-level statement of what these candidates believe. What is their conservative philosophy? You know, they get very much into the specifics, and I think the debate format is conducive to that. But what do they stand for? I mean, why does cutting one quarter of the federal government, why is that important? What does that mean for us as Americans or as conservatives? I don't think anyone's making that big statement yet, and I think that's needed.
All right. Michael Maslansky, Republican pollster, president of Luntz Maslansky Strategic Research, Newsweek columnist Eleanor Clift, thank you both so much for doing this with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Up next, the novelist Michael Chabon. Remember Cavalier and Clay? Well, the new one is the Yiddish Policemen's Union, and it's going to be really interesting to talk about. Stay with us.